The Learn Me Something Podcast with your hosts, Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, homies. You guys out there, you
everybody out there in podcast land.
My name is Rich.
And I'm Aaron.
And we are over at Alex's place. So you know what that means, everybody?
Oh, yeah.
Homies, it is Learn Me Something this week. Aaron, what are we going to learn?
Well, you know, after doing some lighthearted ones, I'm heading back to pain is the subject of today.
Pain. Man, that must have been a pain to research.
It kind of was. In fact, you know, there was a lot of, emotional and physical pain involved. I had to, hammer my hand a few times just to, remind myself of what pain felt like. It just, to put myself in that that frame of reference,
I can imagine.
I hear that you just got your chest waxed, so that would be a level of pain that I have not experienced.
Chest and back wax. Yes, yeah. I'm a very pretty man, and in order to maintain my level of prettiness, I do the chest and the back waxing, which hurt so much the first time I got it done.
I can only imagine.
Like, because I'm a hairy guy.
Me too.
Born.
Which is why I haven't ever
and I, gone that I route. So I get my back waxed a lot because my wife, likes it and she's tired of shaving it. So I'm like, I'm going to go and get my back waxed. And then I'm like, you know what? I'm working out. I'm looking pretty good. I went up there and I'm like, listen, just do the front two. And holy moly, I had to have a nap after. It was that bad because I was flexed for like 30 minutes while she's ripping this stuff out of me.
It's funny how that goes. And there's actually a lot of evidence that shows that actually leads to like inflammation inside the body where that, creates, a chemical reaction, and since our brains react to negative impulses, like 10 times stronger than positive ones, it's an experience you're going to hold inside yourself for a long, long time.
I remember it exactly every time I go in there, but now it's not bad. Now I can go through it and it's fine. Like I still tense up a bit.
You've yanked out all the nerve endings already.
No, it still hurts. It hurt today.
Some of them regrow back.
They all grow back all the time. But I took caffeine. You're not supposed to take caffeine before you go into that because it heightens your senses. I had two cups of coffee, then I went in. I'm like, this is going to be bad. It was pretty bad. Uh-huh. But I lived. That's all right. I'll see you again next month.
Somehow survived the experience and we're a better man for it.
And I'm wearing my tank top.
A prettier man, at least. Eh?
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Right. So, first of all, I kind of wanted to talk about where in the brain pain originates. And there was a study that's actually shown in a lot of different ways, emotional and physical pain kind of show up in the brain in the same spots.
Mm-hmm.
It apparently activates the anterior insula and the anterior cingulate cortex.
Where are those in the brain?
That is a good question.
The middle part.
they are right around here.
Okay.
And here.
So the top, a back-ish, middle-ish.
Somewhere in the brain.
Side thing.
There is a part called the anterior insula. I did not bring my brain map with me today, unfortunately.
You could have said anywhere and I'd be like, oh, really? Yeah, well, that's nice. Yeah.
I was just pointing to random areas of the...
It's right near the flux capacitor.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly. How exactly do you have part of your brain inside your stomach? I'm not sure how that... Well, that will be a separate podcast, is that they've actually discovered that your stomach is technically a second brain.
Mm. But I know for many people it is.
Well, there's actually...
I get hangry.
Apparently your stomach actually has a direct link to your brain and can actually send specific like chemical and electrical impulses through the brain directly influencing how your mood and everything.
Hangry. Anyone who's ever been hangry knows what
I
mean.
Oh, I have that. I have that, unfortunately. I do experience that at times.
Me too.
But anyway,
I will never
back
admit
to. Now, whether being hangry activates the... whether there's a separate part of your brain that might... cause irregularities or whatever in your brain that might allow,
it probably drives the survival instinct. You got to eat.
Well, that's where pain derived from originally in terms of like an evolutionary standpoint, right? Where pain is designed to keep us from doing things that would cause the body harm, or at least to try to stop us from doing it again.
Mm-hmm. Like touching fire.
Exactly. Right.
Slamming your hand with a rock.
Many different ways that you could damage yourself or be damaged and
I'm just thinking from a caveman perspective.
Exactly.
What hazards are they going to run into?
Fire bring pain.
Yeah. Rock smash hand.
Rock smash hand, exactly. Mammoth tusk cause puncture.
Stay away from those things.
Stay away from those things. Yes, yes. And I mean, there's been a lot of kinds. Back in the day, they used to think that animals didn't experience pain.
Who would think such a thing?
Well, apparently there was a 17th century French philosopher called René Descartes, who argued that animals lack a consciousness.
And pain is felt through consciousness only?
That was the theory at the time.
Consciousness meaning what, like that they're, what's the term? That they are aware of their own existence.
Exactly.
What's that term called?
Consciousness.
Sentient.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, they're kind of tired. Yeah, anyway. Yep. Yeah, so his idea was that because they didn't technically, I think the whole idea was that the church, I believe, has said forever that animals didn't have souls.
Mm.
And so I think that's where a lot of this kind of derived from originally, that because they didn't have souls, they were not conscious of their existence, and so therefore they didn't feel pain.
Okay.
Was, I think, how it kind of went at the time. And it wasn't until actually the 1980s where researchers were still unsure if animals experienced pain.
That's just mind-boggling to me.
Vets trained in the U.S. before 1989 were simply taught to ignore animal pain.
Okay.
Like, right?
They hunted then. Obviously, they see, like, I've seen the National Geographic videos. I can tell, and I'm not a vet. I've never gone to school for that. I can tell that animal's in some sort of pain.
And it's very, all you have to do is look in their eyes and you can see that they're feeling something, you know? And now we actually have, you know, evolutionary biologists have actually discovered that they have the same kind of, that mammals in general, and apparently pretty much all mammals, might have this same receptor system in their bodies to receive pain or to experience it.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Which, again, just makes sense.
It's silly to me that someone would even be that, when I hear, egocentric, or I'm so important that only I feel these things. And what about fear? What about love?
Exactly. And I have to go back to the church again, because a lot of that I feel kind of came from the church feeling, you know, and the idea that we held dominion over everything on the earth. Mm. Right. And so because of that, they had to basically decide, you know, have a way of you know, separating animal life from our life so that, you know, people could go out and kill animals without feeling like they were hurting something that might actually experience pain, and without having to actually engage that, you know, thought process of what, you know, what exactly does that make you if you're killing something that is actually experiencing pain, you know?
Interesting argument. I mean, I look at vegans and I could never be a vegan and vegetarian because I like meat. And like Bill Burr says, I realize that I'm okay with something having to die every single day in order for me to eat. And I'm okay with that. So, but I you know, I want my cows killed civilly, if that's even possible.
and that's the problem, is that how do you decide what's a civil way of killing something?
I don't know. That's interpreted by each individual. Sing them a lullaby, put them in the bed, gun to the back of the head.
I kind of go back to, you know, if you look at it from that standpoint, there's no real, you know, civil way of killing an animal. I mean, you know, predators do it to survive, but we don't necessarily need meat to survive. We can get our protein, we can get everything we need other than vitamin B12 is the only thing that you can't get from plants.
Yeah, but I got to have a hamburger, man. I just got to.
But, you know, I mean...
And well, luckily, steak.
Luckily, this whole podcast that we run here is about opening our minds to new experiences. And part of that is, again, the idea that you are actually just, you know, enforcing that belief inside yourself that you require this thing that you actually are not addicted nor dependent on in any way whatsoever.
My wife was going through this vegan kick and she's like, oh, we should do it. I'm like, no, I have no interest at all whatsoever of even attempting something like this.
And for me, it's more kind of just looking at the ecological standpoint of it, that at some point we have to at least address the fact that there is some sort of rampant, you know, destruction of land in order to raise animals for us to kill, to eat, when that land could be used to raise plants that would sustain us in exactly the same way.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, we have to at least look at that idea of you know, are we inflicting pain on other species of you know, every other species kind of, you know, inadvertently in a lot of ways, but still, you know, through our actions, you know, what kind of pain are we inflicting upon?
Yeah,
just,
okay.
Just for us to have a steak or to have, you know, fish. Yeah.
Aaron, I'm kind of okay with that.
I know. And a lot of people are. It's again, more just kind of open up the conversation. I'm not saying that we should stop eating meat, that we should stop, but I think it's more just a matter of like, do you need meat every day? Do you need to have, do you need, does something need to die every day for you to eat? Or can you take it down to a once a week thing, knowing again that by killing something every day, you're leading to an ecological disaster that we
are
experiencing as it actually is a matter of, as a matter of fact, the deforestation is directly linked to, you know, cattle pastures and pastures for raising.
Yeah, but is there
livestock?
Another way we could do all of that? Is there another way that we could have our meat and not? I mean, is that a capitalistic thing? Is that people trying to make more money out of it? And there's a way that we can take
that. It's farmers trying to make more money.
So
because
can
if
we
they
have our,
a forest.
Can we have our cow and eat it too? Can we have our cow and eat it too?
See, that's the problem is that a forest is not technically, you know, in terms of a capitalist thing, a forest doesn't make any money.
No, I get that. Yeah.
So the only way for that land to make money is to clear it and put something to grow something on there that's, that's economically viable.
Yeah, sure. I get that. And that's, but I'm saying like,
but that's,
we have
that's
our,
where we have, that's the problem, right? Like, and that's where, you know, this idea of eating meat every day is leading to an issue where we actually have to address the fact that eating meat every day actually is leading to this ecological disaster.
But my argument to that is it because of the demand so high and there's not enough meat out there?
Yes.
I don't know if that's true.
That's why they're clearing more land to raise more animals. That's because our demand for it is so high. That's the whole problem.
And
it's because, again, you want to eat something every day, but it's not just one animal that has to die. Ground beef has you know, they've done DNA tests. It has how many different animals in it to make up a hamburger?
One animal could feed three of us.
But it's not just one animal. That's the problem. You literally are killing... 100 different animals to get all of the meat in that, you know, and I mean, it's spread
that may
out
be
over.
A little excessive.
It's spread out over, but I mean, the fact is that you know, all of these animals are dying so that you can have a burger.
Aaron,
you know?
I just want someone to kill a cow, chop a bit of it up, put it on a barbecue, kick it over to me, okay? I'm asking for one cow to die.
And all I'm asking is for everyone to think about that a little bit. That's it.
All
I'm asking, maybe show a little respect for the fact that you know, you had to actually kill something. I think that we don't think about these things and the actual, like, you know, impact that it does have. And that's where I'm just trying to say
that
pain that we're inflicting is something that might actually need to be actually addressed in all of us in order to hopefully move forward with, and hopefully, an ecologically, viable method of having our meat and eating it too.
Alex was going to say something.
Aaron, I think you raised a salient point there. I think the key word in what you said there was need.
Yes.
And need and to also be
need
aware
versus
of
want.
the difference between need and want. Like Rich, you said, I got to have a burger. Well, you probably don't need to have a burger.
Valid point.
You may want a burger. And also, you know, there's tons of studies that look at human tribes and even some of the tribes that still actually exist today that are hunter gatherers, and oftentimes there's a lot of science behind this that says the way we evolve, we had to adapt to what was around us, and sometimes if the area where you were around had mostly vegetation, you were probably eating mostly vegetation and eating meat when you could get it.
Yeah,
it's not like you could, you know, run out to the grocery store and pick up a piece of meat. You couldn't do that.
And that's the difference between vegetables and meat in the first place, is that a vegetable you can generally just go and pick and eat. Whereas meat, we have to cook it. We have to cut it with knives. Our teeth are not really designed for eating meat in general. We don't
have
that kind of, you know, like canines ripping teeth. We're not set up for that.
But a part of our evolutionary success has been because we are able to cook meat and increase its calorie content. It helps us develop
as better
people.
And again, it comes down to the fact that from a physiological standpoint, we only required once a week, once a month kind of thing in order to get that vitamin B12. That's the only thing that we cannot get from plants and that we actually kind of need some sort of alternate source for. But now that we have supplements, you really don't even need for anything to die whatsoever. Again, need versus want.
Yeah, for sure.
Right? Like, technically, you know, like, you can sustain yourself without having to kill something. And just because you want to kill something, again, it's more just about having that thought process involved with it, that you know, something is dying here and that, it you know, it's incumbent on us to at least recognize that pain that we're incurring on everything around us.
I am, and trust me, I have considered that. I used to work with slaughterhouses. I've been in them before. I've seen what happens.
I grew up on the farm, technically, right? Or adjacent, farm adjacent, at least, you know, where grandpa owned a farm. And I grew up, you know, in the 4-H and you know, doing cattle and you know, that whole thing. And I had a, you know, a long period of my life where I just went, these are stupid, stupid creatures. They deserve to die. And now
I don't think they deserve to die. They need to die.
But
I need more burgers.
But that's exactly, like, that's kind of the thought process that a lot of people do have. You know, I have a buddy who's having his wedding right now, and on their honeymoon, they're going hunting. Mm-hmm. And I just can't wrap my brain around that idea that you're celebrating your new life by going to kill something. Like, how, what?
Yeah.
Just doesn't, you know, doesn't compute in my head. And that's, you know, maybe my own limitation of not being able to, you know, and I totally respect that, you know, a hunter that goes and, you know, actually hunts something and shows respect to the animal and, you know, takes all of the things that he can use from it and actually, you know, tries to, you know, versus, you know, a slaughterhouse where there's 1,000 chickens with their heads being hacked off every day living in, you know, a square foot of space and, you know, it's a kind of a different thing.
Yeah, I agree.
And again, it's something that, you know, most people aren't really aware of what actually goes on with the food that they're consuming every day.
Yeah, I saw that video, even Meet Your Meat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that didn't sway me, guys. Casino did not sway me
one
bit.
And again, I'm the same way. Like, I do love a burger. I do love meat. And again, it's more like I'm trying to just kind of just, again, be thoughtful of it and try to cut back at least and try to find alternate sources and try to, you know, try to look at the impact that I do have. Because I really feel that when we leave this place, we're kind of pulled back and we're going to be shown our impact on everything around us. And I really feel that a lot of us are going to get out there and go, oh, shit, really? That's what I did this whole time I was here? Oh, shit. That's what caused that? Oh, shit.
That would be troubling if that happened.
And that's, you know, and just without, you know, inadvertently, you know, we've caused a lot of issues here that with a little bit of thought behind, I feel that we could actually make some strides towards fixing. You know, and then that's, you know, I'm engaging the same part of my brain right now as where I just stubbing my toe.
Are you?
Apparently.
Yeah.
You know, feeling a little bit of that empathy, a little bit of that emotional pain.
Sure.
Apparently links up in the same part of the brain. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fascinating. I didn't know that. It's interesting that the feelings do though.
Like yeah, feeling, that was kind of because when feeling. I started this, you know, when I went into this idea of you know, doing a bit of research on pain, you know, I wanted to find out whether it activated the same parts. And apparently it's because it's an economy of evolution, essentially, that it uses the same neuroreceptor system in the body to both receive and perceive pain.
Yeah, so interesting. With heart being heartbroken, is that an evolutionary development?
That would be a social aspect of it for sure, right? And again, like when someone hurts you emotionally, it has the same impact and it causes the same chemical reaction
hurts,
in
man.
The brain. Exactly.
Have you ever been heartbroken?
Oh, for sure.
Like heartbroken.
Oh, yeah.
It sucks, man.
Oh, it does. It does.
I haven't been heartbroken.
And it's one of those things.
Time.
Like, and even they say that if even the smallest like slight that someone, it can take up to 6 to 8 months for your brain to actually process that subconsciously. Yeah. Even if you feel like you've moved on and you feel like your brain, you're still kind of subconsciously processing that in your background. And every once in a while, it'll bubble up and go, "Oh, right, that happened." And then you come in, and then you go on with your day.
Even with friends, ever been like a good friend that just did something or just.
They were supposed to meet you and then you sat there for an hour waiting for them. They didn't bother calling. It's you know.
Or just, yeah, like, that's and it kind of hurts,
or, you
right?
know, the girl that you have a crush on and, you know, you go and ask her and she rejects you and you just feel that just absolute destroyal of your soul.
You know what happened? My mother had something happen.
That's not even a word, but.
Destroyal. We just made it one. Learn me something. Dictionary.
Learn me something, yeah.
My mother had one happen recently to her where she goes out on this girls' night. Mm-hmm. All these girls that she went to high school with. Not girls' night, girls' weekend. One of them owns like a $1 million cabin up the lake and they go up there and she brags, oh, it's such a good time hanging out with my girls. So, and she did it a couple years. And then this past year, they're all posting on Facebook like, oh yeah, I had a great time. They didn't invite my mother. And she was like so upset about it. It's like, I got kicked in the gut. Like they didn't even think to invite me. They invited other people who they went to high school with weren't even part of their friends. And she was like, I mean, I talked to my mother every weekend, and it was like a couple weekends in a row. It was like, what did I do? Yeah, it was like that. Yeah. I could just sympathize with it. Like that pain. Oh, I know
for
that
sure.
pain.
Especially
right there
if you went there and
chest.
You had a good time. But and that's
or
where,
you just thought
you're
part of the team.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like then you're like, you're not as important to these people as you are or they are to you. And that's what it is. I mean, that's what happened was when it happened with friends. It's like, but you're so important to me, mm-hmm. you know? And then I'm not, like I was reading on Reddit, I don't know why I'm getting into this, but I read on Reddit where the last time you talked to your best friend or what caused a breakup and all of those things with just with their friends where someone asked someone to be their best man at their wedding. The guy's like, no, I'm not coming. I'm not going to be your best man. Like, could you imagine the sting that would hit? And I could just read that, just knowing what that must have felt like to that person, that hurt, that actual physical hurt, right? Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's like because they've shown that the brain can actually cause pain as well, right? There was an example of a guy who had jumped off of a scaffolding. He landed on a board with a nail on it, which had come through his boot. And when he went to the emergency room, like he felt like this had gone through his foot. He was sure that he had been impaled by this, but when they took the boot off, it hadn't actually gone. It had gone between his toes and had missed him completely.
Mm-hmm.
But his brain had told him that he was impaled.
Yeah.
And was absolutely sure that he was going to pull off his boot and find blood and would have to pull this thing out of his...
It's crazy how the brain works, right? Because why do you feel pain? Because your brain's telling you something's there, right?
There's also, there's instances where emotional pain can cause physical pain.
Yeah, you talked about that.
Where, you know, if you're holding that, you tense up your shoulders, and so that can cause physiological issues.
Is that what that is?
It can actually, you can have problems with your intestines because of that channel that I was talking about. It's a two-way thing. So your brain can actually cause, you know, disruptions in your intestinal system and into your digestive tract and the whole, and there's that, you know, communication between where, you know, if things are out of whack one way or another, it communicates and that can throw your system out of whack.
Yeah, I just going back. I remember being heartbroken, being broken up. I got people. Twice.
Oh,
okay,
geez.
So people left me to get married to somebody else twice. That happened twice to me.
Ooh,
twice. I'm not joking.
Like immediately left and like
they left me like, to like, go and
like
get married
you
to somebody
to go and walk up.
I
the
was
altar
the rebound to... guy for like 2 months, three months.
Oh wow,
twice it happened. After the second time, I was like, really? Like, seriously?
Was it two times in a row, or did you at least have a little...
No, there was one break in between there. So it was my first girlfriend ever when I was like... Well, first serious girlfriend ever. I was like 20. She had broken up with her boyfriend and then met me. And then we were together for like 3-4 months, maybe. I was young. It was stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
And,
well, you know.
Hey, it's FYI, I'm getting married to Mark. I'm going back to him. We decided we're going to get married again. Like, oh, okay. And I just remember that being 20 years old and just know, that hurt that hits your chest, you know?
Where you thought this was the woman you were going to be with forever.
Yeah, I was 20. I was stupid, you know, whatever.
Some dude walked in and stole your life.
But also the rejection, like, you know, picked that guy over me. It's not like, hey, it was just not right. It's like, no, I like this guy better than I like you. And then it happened again. This girl named is going out with.
Yeah.
That was a smaller thing, but... And again, she came back.
But you still feel that heartache.
I remember that. She was like, this happened again. Like, this guy's better than me, I guess. I don't know. But they were together for like 5 years. Mm-hmm. And they broke up because he slept with somebody else, Becky. Hopefully she doesn't listen to this. I'm going to feel so bad. I'll edit that part out, make her name Pam.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Pam, quotation. The names have been changed, too.
I still have her friends on Facebook. The first girl didn't. She's a Trump supporter, so we didn't get along so well.
Yeah.
Went south after that happened.
I have that talk with a few people as well.
Love of my life. We're not friends on Facebook anymore because, not love of my life, but the first love of my life because she supports Trump. You got to draw the line somewhere, man.
Well, it sounds like even the supporters are starting to lose interest in the bullshit.
He's got his faith. He's never going to, his base faith is never going to go anywhere.
See, and that kind of brings me to a point I wanted to make also, is that they're finding that also that, you know, people who suffer from chronic pain may have a lot of the issues, like what I call, you know, irritable asshole syndrome.
So what's it called?
Irritable asshole syndrome.
Okay, yeah.
Where, you know, you got these people who are just irritable assholes, right? And yeah. you know, the fact of the matter is that we're not born irritable assholes, but we're made into, and a lot of that could be just reaction to, you know, like you said, rejection or heartache or something like that. It could be an emotional pain that they're carrying around, and that causes them to lash out. Like, I don't feel like anyone really, you know, like I said, is you know, naturally just an irritable asshole. I feel that, you know, we don't deal as a society with people well in terms of bringing each other up in general. Right? A lot of us like to celebrate when people fall on their face more than helping them lift themselves up after they have.
Interesting you say that, you know? Because I went through a psychology course back in my college days, and the psychology professor said something interesting when we were all given our presentations. Mm. And it's kind of true. He says, everyone, you're standing up in front of this room and you're nervous and you're talking to people and whatnot. When you're nervous and trying to give your presentation, he said, remember, everyone in this room is on your side.
Yep.
Everyone wants to, no one in here wants to see you fail.
Yeah, exactly.
But, and that's interesting that it happens in a closed environment like that. But when you look at it on a bigger spectrum, people like, you know, Kanye West or Kim Kardashian or Trump or, yeah, you want to see them fail, right? There's not...
Well, I think with anyone, like, I don't want to see Trump as a person fail. What I want to see is his ideologies, like his immigrant ban, his, you know, the problems with his psyche that, again, I feel are constituted a lot from an emotional pain, right? Like, I feel like a lot of this, if you went back into his history, which we have, you know, on an unpublished podcast here, we went into his history, and his dad was probably just as much of an asshole as he is, mm-hmm. and treated him in a way that made him into the person that he is today in a lot of different ways, right? I mean, again, it's a reaction to his environment that kind of makes people who they are.
Sure, yeah.
So in a lot of ways, the you know, lack of nurturing that he experienced as a child has led to a lack of wanting to nurture.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of his relationships with other people, his, you know, ability to govern people in general, you know, and actually, you know, feel an empathetic response to the people that he's actually, you know, tasked with, you know, being, you know, the president of.
Yeah. Yeah. That's,
you know, and again, I it's not that I don't like Trump in as a person, because I feel that, you know, if he had addressed, like all of us have redeemable qualities, and he just has parts of his, you know, psyche that, you know, need some correction.
He certainly causes me a lot of pain.
And you know, again, that emotional pain is felt in the same spot. And so your brain reacts in the same way. And so you're carrying that subconsciously in a lot of ways, like you would having, you know, a cut.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that a lot of people don't want to, at least I want to believe that people don't want to see Trump fail, because if he fails, you suffer as a citizen of the country. So I think more people would rather see his ideology change, or him have a complete turnaround in his way of thinking and his approach to many things. Of course, the likelihood of that happening is
that's my problem with Trump, is that he's not interested in listening to the people who are actually trying to help him.
No, Trump's a narcissist. The more I see about it, the more he actually may be a genuine narcissist, like a diagnosable narcissist.
Most likely with psychopathic tendencies, right? he doesn't seem to feel much empathy for anyone. And that's kind of one of the hallmark things that they kind of, you know, is, you know,
well, just everything has to be about him.
Yeah.
You know? I've actually heard some psychologists touch on that, without, of course they can say unequivocally without sitting in the room and diagnosing him, but they say he absolutely displays so many of the classic signs of narcissism.
Yeah. Narcissism.
Definitely narcissism.
And you don't want somebody like that running the country.
No, you really don't. No, because that leads to despots and you know.
You want humility, and that all causes us pain, right?
Well, it's again, the ability to feel other people's pain and be able to use that as a tool for being able to direct your actions, right? Like, to be able to, you know, think about what other people might feel about how you're, who you are and what you're putting yourself out, especially when you're in that position. You know, are your actions causing pain to, you know, more people than you're helping?
Okay, so I'm gonna play devil's advocate that Trump's position is that he's helping. He was elected by a certain populace,
and he has a base that is still
is to help that it's always been America first. He doesn't care about other countries. He needs to help America first. He's going to help other countries when it is in line with helping America. If that other country can help us, or help them, because I'm not American, then he's going to, you know.
But how do you differentiate who's helping and who's not helping? And why are we having this conversation of America against versus us together?
Because neither of us are president of the United States. And we would be having that conversation, but we're not, because Trump is. And Trump is president because you have a lot of people down there that want it to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
And again, I think a lot of that comes down to pain. You know, a lot of those people are feeling something that they can't necessarily express, but that they're lashing out at is this, you know, imaginary. And if you watch Fox News and all these kind of things, they give you a very ready packaged, you know, enemy for you to take your hatred out on, if that's how you want to go.
Yeah,
you know?
There's definitely a lot of propaganda about it.
We've kind of veered off of what I really wanted to. Anyway,
how did Trump come into every single one we do?
Well, you know, unfortunately, it's our example of someone just, you know, generally bringing pain to their surroundings instead of, you know, and you know, as we've done talks on empathy and that kind of thing, it's again, you know, it just kind of touches on a lot of that, and it gives us a handy, you know, touch point to, you know, really highlight a lot of the issues that this brings up. You know, lack of empathy really leads to a lot of the things that you see, right? A lack of, you know,
these all tie together.
Exactly. That's what I love about all of our, you know, all these podcasts that we do, you know, all of it in one way or another, all of these things will tie back together. And I hope that, you know, 5 years from now, we look back and go, oh, wow, geez, really? Right? That all led to this. Wow, that's crazy, man.
One can dream.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. 5 years from now, here we go. Anyway, so a part of this, one of the main things that I discovered also through this research was they've discovered a single gene that might actually lead to a viable method of controlling pain. And our specifically our reaction to it. Now, this comes from a couple of different studies. There was a study done on people with congenital insensitivity to pain.
That's people that can't feel pain, right?
Right.
I've seen the Health episode about that.
Literally, they can feel pressure. Mm-hmm. So they can feel if you're touching something, they can feel that pressure. But if it were a hot or a cold thing, they could not feel it.
Yeah. I saw there was a Health episode on that. Second Time Health has come up in our podcast.
Well, I believe it was the same reference twice, but
no, this is a new one. There was a girl in there that had, because if you ever watch House, he's chronically in pain and taking the Vicodin, and I said it was codeine.
Oh, is that the man on fire syndrome, which is the one I'm gonna get to as well?
I don't know. No, I don't know what that is yet. Okay. We haven't gotten that far in the podcast,
exactly.
So I don't know. But
a
there was
little,
a girl
preview for you.
There was a girl that couldn't feel any pain. He's like, okay, I gotta figure out why she can't feel pain, because I want to not feel pain.
Well, apparently they've discovered why she didn't feel pain.
And why is that? Please tell me.
Well, we'll get to that.
Okay.
But I also want to talk, because this was the one end of the spectrum where people who don't feel any pain whatsoever. And they found that it was actually a genetic thing, apparently, where it was passed on through a familial line, where they had studied a family of people and like 33 of them all had this same kind of chronic insensitivity to pain. And the problem is that, you know, if you break a limb, there was an instance of one guy who had had a skiing accident where he had basically hammered his head into the ground and gone acid or tea kettle, but then hadn't gone to the doctor or anything to get checked out afterwards. And then 6 months later was feeling kind of, you know, tense in his shoulders and had issues. And so he went to the doctor and he had actually broken three vertebrae in his back.
Yeah, that's the problem when you can't feel pain, because if you have something going wrong, that's the brain's or the body's way of saying something's going wrong.
And without that
feedback, take a look-see.
And that's the funny thing about this whole pain thing is that it's only in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
Like your body technically doesn't feel pain. It's only a reaction inside your brain. So like what happens is there's the initial, and I've got an actual article in here actually about the how it actually goes about, but we'll get to that in a minute.
Okay.
Anyway, so again, as I was mentioning, that's the one end of the spectrum where people don't feel pain, but then there's the other end where people have a what's called man on fire syndrome again, and it's actually a condition called erythromelalgia.
That's a tough one to say.
Or something like that. Yeah. Or something like that. Yeah. Where their nerves are actually constantly on high alert.
Yeah, yeah.
So if they feel warmth on their skin, it can feel like burning. If they get cold, it can feel like a frostbite. Like,
yeah, I'm very cold, I was going to say.
Yeah.
Like a freezer.
And they, yeah, and it's a constant, you know, nerve on fire kind of feeling. So, and these are the people that have been, you know, prescribed the opioids and the thing where normal painkillers don't help, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's another part of this whole pain issue that we're talking about is the whole opioid crisis and fentanyl and corfentanil and all the things from there. That's where, you know, like opioids are good for an acute pain, something that happens, you know, for like a 2 or 3 day kind of like a toothache or something. If you've gone in for something like that, if you can get onto it for a couple of days, it's very effective for that. The problem is that they're prescribing these opioids for chronic pain, which is something that persists over a long period of time.
Mm.
And now they're finding that, you know, there's differing studies on it, but they're saying it's between 3% and 26% of people who are on these chronic prescriptions get addicted to opioids.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what we came up with in the
previous episode. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's where like the opioids, they link to a specific receptor, but they're not necessarily taking care of the pain itself. It's just blocking your reception of it.
Yeah. Yeah, right? For sure.
And so what they've discovered is there's this single gene called SEN9A. And mutations of this are linked to both the chronic insensitivity to pain, congenital insensitivity to pain, and the man on fire syndrome. So on opposite ends of the spectrum, this single gene was linked to the both of these pain problems or you know, chronic brain reception of pain problems.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it was two separate groups that were studying these two separate issues that basically linked to the same gene.
Really? So that could help people with chronic pain?
Exactly. The idea is that gene encodes what's called, there's a sodium channel called NaV1.7. I believe that's it. So a sodium channel is in the membrane of a neuron, and it's a portal that allows charged particles to flow in and out of nerve cells.
Yep.
Okay. So
I remember that from biology class.
Yeah, well, there you go. See, you
positive
learned,
and
you
negative. That's right. I remember this stuff.
Perfect. So this specific sodium channel seems to control the experience of pain. A faulty NaV1.7 channel causes sensations that typically wouldn't register in the brain are instead translated into extreme pain. So faults in this. So essentially that sodium channel opens and closes, and that's what apparently regulates the amount of pain that you feel. And so people with the erythromelalgia have those sodium channels are constantly open. Or what happens is they react differently. So the channels are more likely to open, and also that when those channels are open, they open for longer, amplifying the feeling of discomfort.
Right. Okay.
So in those people, it sometimes gets locked open, and so they're constantly in that hypersensitivity.
Right.
Right. Whereas the people who have the congenital insensitivity actually have, you know, closed.
They're closed.
Off.
Yeah.
Exactly. So they're thinking that specifically.
And there's a gene that could do that.
There's a gene that encodes that sodium channel.
Right.
And there's one specific gene and one specific sodium channel that apparently they can now hopefully target in order to limit our perception of pain.
That would be great if they do that, because I know so many people that live with chronic pain. My mother-in-law, for example, has post-polio.
And might be able to do it in a way that doesn't, like with the opioids, it doesn't have the same addictive properties,
right,
but would specifically target that and therefore wouldn't have, hopefully, as many of the side effects associated with a lot of the drugs. Like even acetaminophen kills a lot of people, because if you take over the prescribed dosage, it quite quickly becomes a lethal dose.
Hmm.
And that's, you know, again, now that we're into this chronic pain, and more people are being diagnosed with chronic pain all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's becoming a problem more and more as we go.
I wonder if the athletes would take advantage of that or start to abuse it with, you know, injuries and what have you, if they found a way to.
I think athletes have access to.
I'm just saying about, like, you know, the inability to reduce the amount of pain you feel that would heighten performance or, you know.
Well, even like you look at, you know, Buddhist monks, they go through training where they're constantly abusing their bodies. But what they find that, you know, they'll sit and they'll punch a barrel of sand repeatedly, boom, 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 boom. And they find that that actually causes microfractures in the brain that fill with more calcium and actually make the bone stronger.
Microfractures. In the hands.
In the hands.
You said the brains.
In the brains. Yeah, microfractures in the brains of the...
Just want to clarify.
Of the bones.
I was like,
bones.
Really? Your brain just fractured?
Yeah, totally.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
You could have went with yes, I would have believed you.
Wow. Just say it with conviction. So anyway, microfractures in the bones fill with calcium and actually makes the bone stronger. Mm-hmm. So that works on every bone in your body. If you do it in your arms, if you do it in your hands, if you do it in your legs, so they'll kick a tree with their shin repeatedly in order to cause these microfractures and it actually makes them stronger.
Well, good for them.
But it also helps them to mitigate the amount of pain that they feel. They can actually block that off in a lot of ways. And that was one of the things that I was hoping to get to that I didn't, but actually the psychological, you know, turning off of pain, right? Or being able to, because there's soldiers on the battlefield who say that they've had wounds and they didn't even realize that they had that wound until they look down and see blood.
But that's more adrenaline and more shock.
But whether it's adrenaline or whether it's their brain actually physically deciding or deciding not to process that pain, whether it's linked specifically to adrenaline or might have other, you know, physiological factors involved, that's, you know, a good question.
Because I saw a documentary a while ago about a hypnotist who could hypnotize people and they could go through. There was something where a woman went through a surgery while hypnotized under no anesthetics. I remember this now.
Yeah.
But I think they had to shoot her up with some because she started like freaking out a bit. Like, holy cow.
See, there have been cases where they do hypnosis and
they do
you
that
know,
with
I
the
mean,
brain too. They don't put you to sleep when they cut your brain. What?
Well,
that
because
freaks me out,
because
man.
Your brain doesn't have nerve receptors inside
it
for pain.
What it has or what it doesn't have. You're cutting my brain open. You're putting me to sleep. I don't want to be awake for that shit.
There was actually a musician who played guitar while they did the brain surgery because he wanted to make sure that he wouldn't lose his ability to play guitar. And now that's one thing, like the actual nerve receptors that link to pain are called nociceptors, I believe. Nociceptors. Is that where I found that?
That sounds good.
Yeah, something like that.
Nociceptors.
And apparently they are what's called a long fiber nerve cell. And they basically connect from the brain all the way down to your skin. And there's, you know, millions of different nerve endings that they're apparently the endings of these long fiber nerve cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what transmits the pain.
Now, people that get third-degree burns, they this less painful because you're actually frying. Is it those nerves?
No. That's more painful because you've now burnt off the ends of those nerves, and now they have that same problem as the man on fire, where now those receptors.
Oh, so when they come back.
And so, like in a lot of times, those third-degree burns, they experience pain for months or years, and sometimes that pain can be ongoing for forever and ever, depending on how bad, you know, severely that burn is.
Crazy with the amount of science that we have, we can't figure out some way just to shut that off in the brain, right?
But that's what this SEN9A associated sodium channel NAV1.7. Hopefully we'll, you know, and there's a couple of pharmaceutical companies that are developing drugs to specifically target this sodium channel and this gene to hopefully be able to again help us with this opioid epidemic that we're having because of, you know, misprescribing of painkillers.
Mm-hmm. Pain's a bitch, man.
It really is. And it really leads to a decreased quality of life for a lot of people. There's some, you know, 2 million Americans right now who, you know, admit to being, you know, addicted to opioids.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Addicted to opioids.
Oh, no. The number of people who are in chronic pain is much worse.
Yeah.
Right. And in general, like, you know, once a year, I would assume that pretty much everyone experiences some sort of acute or chronic pain, you know, and it touches everyone. That's one of kind of the unifying experiences of humanity is that we all have pain one way or another, whether it's emotional or physical, we all experience pain. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, there's people who don't, right? So, you know, making these blanket statements again, you know, but...
What if there's someone that feels no emotional pain? I guess there would be. I guess there would be like a psychopath, right?
Yeah, that's one of, the, I believe, the kind of hallmark of psychopathy is a lack of emotional connection to other people.
That would be an interesting one, psychopaths.
Yeah, right, so I think that's right. that was basically what we wanted to go over today. You know, it's an ongoing thing. This was just kind of an interesting little...
Well, Aaron, you missed on one key thing that I think we... Why is it when you get kicked in the balls, there's like that, that 5-second delay between you getting kicked and it actually hurting? No,
see,
like,
and that's again because you don't actually experience that pain there. You experience it in your brain, right?
So it takes that far to travel.
It maybe those...
Some people take further.
A lot of it, I think there's a certain threshold that these nerve receptors actually have to hit before they actually transmit that yeah. signal to the brain, right? So maybe those ones just have an extra little delay where they go, did we just... Yep, no, that definitely happened. Oh, boy.
5 minutes of pain.
Yeah.
Make it stop.
Anyway, there was one quote that I wanted to bring in here from a guy named James Baldwin, who was an American author. And it's, "You think your pain and your heartbreak are unprecedented in the history of the world, but then you read. It was books that taught me that the things that tormented me most were the very things that connected me with all the people who were alive, who had ever been alive." Yeah. Right?
The pain.
One way or another, like I said, we've all experienced some sort of...
I got a good quote that all I just thought of now from the book, The Fault in Our Stars.
Mm-hmm.
Have you read that one? Have you seen the movie?
No.
Solid. Junior-ish, but still, I really liked it. I like that author. He's really good.
Right.
The quote was, "Pain demands to be felt." I really like that quote.
Mm-hmm. See, and I think a lot of people, you know, shy away from pain, but I really feel that pain is kind of one of those things that it's meant to be a learning experience. It's meant to be something that, you know, you're not necessarily supposed to, you know, shy away from, but to, you know, sometimes embrace as part of the human existence, you know? And I mean, not necessarily to go seeking pain as like a masochist, but, you know, to, you know, understand that, you know, these things kind of happen sometimes and it's actually part of the human, you know, our bit here.
That which does not kill you makes you stronger.
Indeed.
All right.
So I think that's everything for us today. Check us out on Twitter at LMS Podcast. Like us on Facebook. We love that kind of thing.
Love the Facebook likes.
If you have a nice comment to make, by all means, throw it up there.
If you have a bad one too, if or a misguided one,
hey,
whatever.
You know, exactly.
Let
you
us know.
We're all here to, you know, and again, like, you know, all of these things, you know, we have this SCN9A, but tomorrow they'll decide that the SCN9A had nothing to do with it. And
then we're back to square one.
That's the joys of science, is that it's an ongoing process. So we're all hoping to just learn something. And if we have to learn something more tomorrow, well, so be it.
And I'd like to leave the listeners with one of my own quotes. Too.
All right.
By all means.
Which is from one of my favorite movies, The Princess Bride.
Uh-huh.
Nice.
Love that one.
Yeah.
"Life is pain, Highness. Anyone who says differently is selling something."
Indeed.
That was Wesley, wasn't it, said that?
That is correct.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Good movie.
Great movie.
I never read the book. You read the book, Alex?
No.
No. Yeah.
No. Yeah, actually. So many books to read. Good. So many books. Mm-hmm. So little time.
I can't think of other pain quotes other than "House of Pain." Jump around. Jump up and get down.
I've got one from one of my favorite authors, Stephen R. Donaldson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, "There is no pain so black or deep that courage and clear sight may not find the other end of it."
Mm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's like a suicidal thing.
Well,
I'm feeling it now, but
more,
maybe not, you know.
But that's it's more that there's always hope that eventually pain recedes and then you're left with, you know, hopefully a learning experience that will make you a stronger person. Yeah, there we go.
All right, you can have to do the outro again now. We talked for another 5 minutes.
Yeah, well, you know. All right, so you can find us on the hologramradio.org, the part of the Hologram Radio Network. Thank you for listening, everybody. We really appreciate it.
See you next week.
See you next week. And Florian Dendrite, may your brain cells flourish.
You've been listening to Learn Me Something with Aaron Stewart and Rich Plum on Hologram Radio. If you like the podcast, please rate and subscribe in iTunes and share it with a friend. To find other interesting podcasts like this one, please visit our website at hologramradio.org.